There we are. Hello and welcome to Take 127 Overlooked on Ship Full of Bombs, Thames Delta Independent Radio, www.sfob.co.uk. Well, this month is a sad month, isn't it?
A very sad month.
Yes. Yeah. Horror film aficionados may have recognised that particular piece of music as being called The Gonk, and it was a piece of library music that was used in George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead. George A. Romero, of course, who sadly died on the 16th of July at the age of 77. What can you say about George Romero? Visionary filmmaker, not a particularly good director in my opinion, but a visionary filmmaker.
And a man full of lots of ideas as
well. Absolutely visionary. The man who gave us the concept of the modern zombie movie. The zombie that we all know and love, that came from George Romero. He was the... As I think I put on Facebook at the time when I found out that he died, he was the man who shaped my nightmares. Huge fan of Romero, huge fan of his zombie movies. So we're not going to talk about any of those movies.
Not today.
We're going to talk about the rubbish ones that nobody's ever heard of.
Because we're weird like that.
Yes. We're going to look at some of his overlooked movies. I've completely kind of monopolised the opening bit there. Chaps. Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hello again.
Kirk. Hello, Kirk.
Hello, Dan.
And Ian. Hello, Ian. Ian's waving.
Good for radio waving.
Yes. What are your thoughts on George Romero generally and his oeuvre and his contribution to film as a whole?
I think he was probably one of the first video nasty directors I ever saw, in inverted commas. So I have an affinity for that reason alone. And just the fact that probably, if you're going to talk about, I suppose, B-movie, if you want to call it that, directors, he's probably one of the most successful B-movie directors there's ever been, if you like. So that's kind of my sort of spin on it, I would say.
Mike, have you got anything to...
Well, his zombie trilogy is superb. His zombie sort of extra zombie films are not exactly superb, but I think they're worth a watch. His weirder stuff, that two of the films we're going to talk about tonight, are definitely interesting. He's very watchable films. I think they're all unique in their way. I don't think he invents cliches. He doesn't follow cliches. You said he invented the modern zombie. Well, he did. Every shambling zombie that's come since has got a debt to Romero. If he'd trademarked it would have been a millionaire. Or probably was a millionaire, but whatever. But yeah, he invented such a lot.
Ironically, of course, Night of the Living Dead. Am I correct in saying that the copyright on it ran out or something? So his original interpretation of the sort of modern zombie, he no longer was getting any money from it, I don't think.
Well, because the investors didn't get any money out of it because they got screwed over by a production company, allegedly. And that's one of the reasons they remade it, so the original investors could get some money.
Oh, okay. That's the Tom Savini remake, isn't it?
Yeah.
He directed the remake. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, fantastic guy. Yes. Anyway, we're not talking about zombie movies tonight, are we?
But you are absolutely correct. The Walking Dead, that exists because of Romero, because of what Romero created. So, hugely, hugely important.
Yeah.
But you're quite right, we're not talking about the zombie movies. That would be too obvious. Too gauche. We want to talk about the films no one has ever heard of.
Because they're not exactly overlooked, those zombies films, are they?
No, they're not.
Most people would have heard of them with an inkling.
Even if they hadn't seen them, they would have heard of them.
Yes. Yeah.
These films maybe not.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know what? I think, should we plough ahead with the first one? Or do we want to just kind of like, as a little amuse bouche, do we want to have a little bit of music before we jump into the first movie? Should we do that? A little palate cleanser? A delicious sorbet of music.
Oh, if you want to. If you
come insist. On, Mike, get your list. I'm trying to fill.
Oh, Mike, I have to get a challenge for Ian then, because you're going to go out of order. Uh-huh. So let's go. Oh, where should we go? Well, we talked about zombies films, so let's get the zombies out of the way. Mm. And let's go. Would you say Dawn or Day is your favourite?
Oh,
that Dawn or Day?
Can't say. No, really difficult question.
That is a difficult question.
Well then, Ian, I leave you either track 9 or track 10. Mm. I'll leave it to you. And we might have to fill why Ian finds that track.
we do like to give Ian a challenge.
Yes.
There we go. Oh! For a palate cleanser. Mm. Oh, marvellous.
Intriguing.
Oh, you know what? Mike.
Yes.
You've got something you want to say, haven't you?
Well, before we leave zombies, I was going to mention the fact that that is Dawn of the Dead.
Yes.
Main titles. And of course, there's different versions, many different versions. And I saw Dawn of the Dead at the cinema when it came out, you know.
Ah.
And there you go. In fact, not. I saw it on double
bill.
1978,
wasn't it?
Yes, it was indeed.
Lord, were you alive then?
I'm
not sure you're alive now, to be honest.
It's one of the undead.
It was actually, I saw a double bill, so it wasn't first run feature. It was double bill with David Cronenberg's The Brood.
Ooh.
What a double bill that
that's
was.
The Brood, that's the Oliver Reed thing. Yes, I've not seen it. I've got it.
That's
home.
A fantastic film. But anyway, that's Dawn of the Dead. And there's different versions. And there's a version, totally different music. Which Goblin, Dario Argento's Goblin, did the music for the European market. But European minus Britain. So we got the American version. Mm. And Europe got a different cut of the film entirely with different music.
Well, I never did.
So there you go.
Good to know.
Well,
yeah, definitely good to know.
Public information message number one.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, before we go, we'll
before
just
we
say,
go, we've only
no, before we go on,
talked about any pills
before
yet.
We go on from zombies. That's it. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We've had a lovely evening. Yeah, there's a great CD available. The unreleased soundtrack music from George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
It's released.
This
isn't
is
it?
Actually.
If you got a CD, it's released.
Previously unreleased.
It's not what you say.
And it's from Trunk Records, and it's got a load of great bits of music in it. And it was all library music that Romero managed to get hold of. Well worth getting. Really, really good. I'm holding the CD up now.
So listeners will be able to see it.
So yes, there we are. So shall we move on then to something non-zombie?
Yes. Right. Let's.
Okay. Well, I'll kick off then, Dan, if
yes,
you don't
please.
Mind.
I would love
as
to.
Previously agreed. Well, the first of tonight's two films that you won't have heard of, and if you've heard of, you won't have seen, is called Knight Riders, with a K. Knight Riders. Nothing to do with Knight Rider and the car.
No.
1981, so this is mid-period Romero. This is, right, his... when he's really got his groove on. This is Dawn of the Dead was 1978, Day of the Dead was 1985, so this is smack in between the two zombie films. Mm. So it's really, he's on top of his form, you would think. Mm. Anyway, it's a Knight Rider. It starts Ed Harris, and his first major film role, he'd been in a small parts in a couple of features, but this is his first major role. And it's, okay, where to start? It's a touring company sort of to do medieval jousting and this and that, touring America. Set in modern day America, 1980s America. The kind of... and they're sort of steeped in Arthurian legends.
Yes.
Is that the name?
Yes.
So, Ed Harris plays Billy or King William, and Tom Savini, who's a makeup guy for all the zombie films, he's got a major role in this as the Black Knight Morgan. And he's really quite good, actually.
Yeah,
you wouldn't
think,
well, he's not an actor. He's pretty decent for this type of film.
Well, of course, don't forget he was the kind of main human bad guy in Dawn of the Dead as well, wasn't he? Kind of like the pretty much the leader of the motorbike.
Yeah,
gang.
But
he wasn't in that long before he got killed,
I don't think. Yeah. But anyway, and then you'll talk about zombie films again. Mm. I think we've got a zombie-free zone now.
Okay.
And there's a guy who's like an equivalent of Sir Lancelot. Who's not a terribly good actor, actually, that guy. Anyway, the twist on this is that they do jousting and stuff, but the big twist, listener, is they do it all on motorbikes, not on horses.
Mm.
And it's basically, here, where's my notes gone? Older Ez Harris, King Billy, or whatever his name is, he's got like high ideals. He's really into this off.
Arthurian.
Every time I struggle, just jump in there with the
Arthurian
legend.
Yes.
So he really believes it, and he's struggling to get the troops together because the troop is kind of disbanding. They're kind of disintegrating a bit. Some of them think he's a bit of a nutter, basically, because he is a bit of a nutter, because he's the one that really believes it for real. The others are in it because they like motorbikes.
Well, I think at this point, actually, you should mention the opening scene. So the very opening scene, that it's Ed Harris is in a river, And he's self-flagellating himself with a twig. I'm actually I don't know why, because I'm used to doing it. But yeah, so and he's
I'll see you in Fruitwell Brook,
But basically, he's completely naked and he's lying with his maid, if you like. And there's no indication at all that it's in the 80s. You know, you could, just looking at that scene, it could be a period film.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important to get that little scene in there. So the idea is that you get the impression that he really is, you know, playing this role for real, and he really sort of believes in the whole medieval kind of basis of pageantry and loyalty and all those values that they sort of held, you know, in those olden days, just before I was born.
Yes. So it's a struggle with him keeping the troop beholden, if you like, to these views. The financial pressures of keeping the show on the road, you know, fixing motorbikes ain't cheap, and a lure of the big time. And there's a promoter comes on the scene and wants to lure, well, all of them, or at least some of them, away to the big time, maybe a TV show, maybe Hollywood. It's not exactly expressed what it is. And certainly, Tom Savini, the Black Knight Morgan, he's drawn towards the dark side, if you like. Like, literally, in this case. Actually, not literally. I've used the word literally in a totally wrong context, but apart from that, metaphorically drawn.
Metaphorically, yes.
Anyway, that's probably the end of my notes. And it's a 2.5 hour film where nothing much happens apart from what I've just described. It's a lot, but I really like the film, actually. I think it's one of those Marmite-type films. I think if you kind of get sucked into the mythology, I think you'll love it. If you're expecting zombies, you'll probably hate it. If you're expecting anything kind of a nice, clean, quick narrative, then you probably won't like it. Because it's a bit freewheeling, if you like. It's like a road movie, but they don't actually do much on the road. They sort of pretty much stay in one place for long periods. So it's a very stationary road movie. It's quite strange. I like it. I really like this film. So I'd be interested to see what you think.
I just jumping in, yes, it's 2.5 hours long and it feels like it. I think they could easily have cut 45 minutes from it. It did feel, though, like Romero and everybody involved was just having too much fun to cut it down to a reasonable length. Personally, I would like to see a special edit of it where they take out a lot of the extraneous material.
There is a different cut of it.
Oh, really?
There's a European cut that's 90 minutes.
Oh, that sounds much better. So they've actually taken an hour out of it.
Yeah. Good Lord. 90 minutes.
Wow. Yeah.
So, but unfortunately not available on the Blu-ray or DVD that we used. So so whether there is one out there, I don't know.
Can I just jump in? We said about the plot, and we can talk about, you know, if it's good or not, in our opinion. A few other things you might be interested to see. The film's got quite a few of Romero regulars in the cast. I want to mention a few. He plays Little John in this, and he's the main black guy in Dawn of the Dead. Christine Forrest, she's in loads of his films, and she's Mrs. Romero.
Yeah, well, she was.
During the making of the film,
yeah.
They were married about 30 years. Yeah. I think they divorced quite amicably. They weren't married when he died. He's married someone else, but I think they had a perfectly good relationship that just sort of hit, you know, a natural end. She's in it. Stephen King does a cameo.
Yeah.
Yes.
With his wife as well.
And John Amplis, who's another one, he's been in Martin, Day of the Dead. He appears in it, although he's got white face makeup, so you might not recognise him. And there's others I'm not going to bore you too rigid with. But it's a typical Romero crew, if you like. And some the main Ed Harris owns the film.
Oh, totally. Mm. Yeah.
And you'd think, well, this is. It doesn't look like a debut performance.
No.
He owns it.
It's very assured,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, very good. Yeah. And Tom Savini holds his own. Yeah. He's nothing wrong with him.
No, nothing at all.
I think as you go down the cast list, it gets a bit wobbly. Mm. But I think quite often Romero films, due to the budget, the people down the cast list were like very cheap and cheerful and you've just got to gloss over that. Mm. But I'm quite happy to gloss over it. I like this film a lot. The magic got me. The ending got me. I like it a lot.
Hmm. And I think you're right about the cast. Anybody out there that's seen Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead, if you watch Knight Riders, you'll be like, oh, God, look, it's that guy that played the policeman. Oh, look, it's the guy that was the police captain. It was that guy that was cut out of the sort of like Dawn of the Dead extended cut. He was in an additional scene and they cut that out for timing purposes. So many people that you recognise from both of those films. So, yeah, a lot of Romero regulars.
Yeah.
And little like Easter eggs, like Stephen King's wife in it is Stephen King's wife. Tabitha, she's in it as well.
Yeah. Kirk, what did you think?
That was my first time ever watching it, so I went in completely cold. It took me a couple of attempts to watch it, I have to admit. The first time I was a bit tired and was snoozing while I watched it, and I just thought, no, I've got to watch this again. So I watched it again, and I got a lot more from it, I have to admit. The one thing that Romero fans might be expecting when they watch this, but they'll probably be sort of surprised, is that...
Zombies?
Well, not so much. Sorry. No zombies. More that you kind of think it's going to be an exploitation film, in that you might see some graphic scenes of stuff, but there isn't, surprisingly, and that really surprised me that it was quite. There was some great stunts on motorbikes and things like that. And that was all very well done and choreographed, but.
Didn't really injure themselves. It was all right.
But it wasn't exploitation.
No, it's fairly family friendly in a bizarre way, isn't it?
In some ways. I mean, it was a bit.
It's quite genteel. I mean, there's some meat, like the corrupt cops giving the guy a beating and stuff
that,
like
that. That was about the most violent part of
it. Yeah,
it
probably was, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that really surprised me because I thought it was just going to be a straight out. Exploitation type film where people are going to get decapitated with poles and stuff. So that really surprised me. What also surprised me was that there were themes in it that were recognisable from Romero films. The sense of community, which you do get in the Dawn of the Dead films and Day of the Dead films, where it's a bunch of people trying to stick together. This was very much... Yeah. That as well, so that's a common theme. And also, on a similar theme, was the fact that, obviously, we mentioned the Black Knight character, Tony Savini, where, he gets tempted by this commercial enterprise where they're going to produce an even better motorbike medieval show and gets pulled into that whole thing. And I think that was kind of like a message from George to say, we can all be tempted by that, but actually, there are other ways around it and we can be independent and do these things ourselves without the big bucks, which is essentially what he tried to be. It was an independent filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And I think that is reflected in the story of this film as well.
I'd agree. I think it might be too much of a reach, but... It's kind of a metaphor of his own career, I think. Mm. He's like, this is like Ed Harris trying to stay true to his beliefs and that all the commercial aspects getting in the way and trying to commercialise his vision. Mm. And that's what happened in his films because he did make a lot of his very, very idiosyncratic films. But he couldn't actually raise money unless he made a zombie film. Mm. So he's very much a victim of his success. Mm. Where he couldn't actually make get the money to make films other than zombie films. Mm. And there was less and less heart, I think, as I went on zombie films. Mm. Ha! Possible little pun there. Mm-hmm. But very little.
Yes, indeed.
But is that too much of a stretch, seen as a metaphor of his own career? Yeah, Kurt says yes, so...
I'm going sorted. With it. Yeah, I'm sold on that.
My only criticism, really, a bit like Dan, was it was probably too long. Two and a half hours was kind of stretching it, and they probably didn't need to be quite that long. But as a debut starring role for Ed Harris, I just thought it was absolutely astounding. I mean, he was really intense, and, you know, he obviously... You could see the experience shining through, you know, and you could see star material there, you know, if you'd watched it back in the day, you know.
Yeah, without giving spoilers, because I think you should see, if you've not seen this film and at all interested in Romero's career, I'd recommend you see it. But there's a scene, I'm not going to give a spoiler, but there's a kid that asks for his autograph early on the film, and he refuses to give it because he says, I'm not like Evel Knievel or one of those. It's like he's this person, and there's kind of a callback towards the end of the film where it's a nice little callback to it. It's just a lovely little scene. Full of lovely little scenes, I think, this film. And quite sad, quite a downbeat ending, which is another reason it probably didn't do that well commercially.
It was downbeat, but it kind of... It went full circle as well, didn't it? Because everyone bonded at the end of it, didn't they?
He kind of achieved his goal.
Yeah.
In a way that he hadn't. Yeah. Or perhaps he had. Perhaps he'd done what he did on purpose.
Difficult to talk about without spoiling it. But,
which might spoil it already, actually.
So it sounds then like this really is one that we think people should have a little look at.
I liked it.
Worth a go.
It's an unusual film, but I think it's worth watching.
It was one of those. It is available, isn't it, on Blu-ray from the folks at Arrow Film. I've got it. I've got the Blu-ray DVD sort of combo pack thing that I just bought when I knew it was available. I thought, oh, a Romero film that I've never seen. I'll buy it. And then instantly, as soon as it arrived and I looked at the front cover, I thought, yeah, I think I've just done my money here. I think I've completely blown it. Watched it, surprised how much I enjoyed it. It really is very much of its time, very 80s, very Romero, i.e. independent, low budget, that'll do. Really good fun, though. Shall we have a little bit of music? By the way, if anybody's listening out there, I have been given some news that sadly Jerry Lewis has passed away. The actor Jerry Lewis. The actor stroke comedian Jerry Lewis. That's Jerry Lewis has passed away. I'm shocked. I thought he was already dead.
Kind of news.
He has passed away. Amazing performance from him in The King of Comedy, of course.
Wonderful.
Should we have some music then?
Okay. For Ian, so he can set it up, it's track 6.
We haven't got any Jerry Lee Lewis, have we? Just to keep it. Okay.
Anyway, this is by. this is a track used in the film. It's by Donald Rubinstein. Rubenstein, however you say it. There it goes. He's gone a bit early there, Ian. I was just going to say, he's in the film singing it himself. And he's done music for quite a few Romero movies. And he scored this film. And when you hear it, you'll see it's very pastoral type, if that's the right word. Very... genteel, lovely music, and that's kind of the tone of the film, and he's captured the tone in this track really well, I think. And give it a listen.
The song's part of the film as well, isn't it?
The song is part of the film. It's called I'd Rather Be a Wanderer, and it's
track number six.
It's track 6. Yes. I thought I said that at the top of my thing.
Well, we like to check,
and it starts slowly.
Sitting here alone in my father's home. sitting here alone in my father's home. Tomorrow I'll be leaving, I'll be on my own. To the hills, as a child I'll go, but I'd rather be a wanderer than to never go at all. Pity there's just emptiness, but with sorrow there comes joy, and I would rather die in a hurricane than never know the storm. Fears I know, I face them as my castle walls fall. Oh, but I would let those castles tumble. I'd never love at all. In my soul, a song lies sleeping, waiting to be born. I can hear her weeping. Deep inside, I feel her dance. Go and run to me, lover, touch my innocence. See that life is an open road. There'll be people who stay, and there'll be people who go. Though at first it pains me so, I think I'm just learning how to let go. Pity there's just emptiness, but with sorrow there comes joy, and I would rather die in a hurricane, never know the storm. Fears I know, I face them as my castle walls fall. Oh, but I would let those castles tumble.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah,
that was nice song, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that was
David Rubenstein, Steinstein, whatever. I'd rather be Wanderer. And that's featured in the featured as in plays live in the film. It's a lovely track.
Lovely. Very nice. So shall we move on to the next movie? I'm turning to you, Kirk.
Yes.
You're going to tell us about it, aren't you? Another one of George Romero's overlooked films. One of his later films as well, isn't it?
One of his later films, yeah.
Take it away. So.
Yes, well, this is a film released in 2000, right at the beginning of the millennium, called Bruiser. You're all going, what? Never heard of it. And likewise, I'd never heard of it either. But I watched it anyway. And I'll give you a bit of a synopsis. So basically, what we've got is a character called Henry, who's a pretty undynamic businessman who lives a pretty unhappy life as well. His wife, Janine, is pretty highly strung and a bit indifferent to him at the moment. So he's obviously going through a few marital problems, shall we say, which leads Henry to have fantasies about murder and suicide. And Henry works for a local magazine with a sleazy, reprehensible boss called Miles. He just basically doesn't seem to get on with this boss at all, but does seem to get on with his wife, who's called Rosie. Who happens to be a photographer at the magazine as well. And basically what happens, well, to start the whole story along, what happens is that Miles has a house party over a weekend, and all
that's
the
that's the boss, isn't it?
Yeah, Miles, yeah. The boss, yeah. Of the magazine, sorry, editor or whatever he is. Yeah, they have a party at his house. He invites all the employees to come along, and basically, you know, it's all hedonistic and everyone's having fun and all the rest of it. And Rosie, the wife of Miles, the editor, or the magazine owner, during the party makes plaster cast models of people's faces and pins all these masks in the garden. And she calls it her a Garden of Lost Souls. And our main protagonist, Henry, basically has a mold done as well. And then Rosie says, do you want to decorate the mask in some way? And Henry says, well, I don't know what to put on it anyway, so it's left blank. So anyway, something happens during the party to Henry's wife and the boss of the magazine, Miles, and he witnesses this. And then when they go home, they have a big bust-up argument, and basically... you know, they go their separate ways and they have a bust up and all the rest of it, and Henry drinks himself to death, and then the next day he wakes up and sees something very strange in the mirror, and I'll leave it at that. So it basically it kind of turns into a sort of revenge type scenario, shall we
say. Are we leaving it at that?
Oh yeah.
Really? Are you leaving it there?
Oh, I think you've got to say what the thing is.
Can
you?
I say what the
yes,
thing is?
Yes, I think so.
Go on. It's I on the cover so. Of the DVD. Yes.
Well, basically, it is the plastercast mask, but it's actually on his face, totally attached to his face.
Mm.
So he looks in the mirror and sees this one and is shocked at this. And then... basically, it's almost like this mask possesses him, and he goes on this kind of revenge scenario where there's a couple of people. There's a colleague that invested some money for him, you know, that he took revenge out on, and obviously it leads to his wife and the boss as well. But I won't go into too much detail about that, how it happens. But
it's kind of that thing, isn't it? You mentioned about the party where there's all the blank plaster cast faces and everybody's invited to decorate their face however they see themselves, and he leaves his blank, as you said, because it seems like he just doesn't know who he is anymore. And then the following morning when he wakes up and looks in the mirror, his entire face has become that mask. And I think it's almost like freed from the concern that he doesn't know who he is anymore. He's suddenly able to go out and start wreaking a bit of havoc and revenge.
It's sort of seeped in mythology in that masks can sometimes make you behave in different ways. And that there's a long story of films and books and mythology about that, where people become possessed, if you like, when they put a mask on and their character changes. So it's on that theme, I would say.
It's funny what you said. He drinks himself to death, but you meant just he gets drunk. Think, is as soon as a mask is that, like, it's a bit like Videodrome, when he puts the box thing on his head, whatever it is, and the film then just like. We're not talking about Videodrome, we're talking about this film. The first half an hour or so is quite. It's quite straight, if you like. It's quite like a TV movie. You got all the tropes, the businessman, the downtrodden bloke, the wife who's like wants an exciting life and she's not getting... So you kind of understand all these tropes. And then half an hour in, when he gets a mask which is attached to his face and he goes on like a bloodlust frenzy, it goes totally bonkers, different movie, which is wildly uneven, which I like, personally. I'm not so sure about the last act, the half an hour. I think it goes a little bit too, like, come on, George, rein in a little bit.
Mm.
There's a extended sequence at like a warehouse party at the end. Now, I didn't think that was too successful.
No.
But the middle bit, when he's got this mask, I think he taps into a lot of kind of body horror, Cronenberg kind of vibes. And yeah, I really like the first half hour is a build up, fine. Middle bit, which is usually the saggy bit of most movies, middle bit. I find it quite nightmarish. He's got the totally blank mask, which is a all too obvious statement about what he was as his overlooked character. He's like totally nothing in his life. He's quite successful in his job, it looks, but his wife basically thinks she's done a wrong one. She expected better. Everybody takes him for granted. His boss sort of thinks he's nothing much. It's a blank face mask is a way too obvious symbol, if you like. But it works in a dream surrealist manner, I think. And I think the middle part of the film is really quite successful. Then I don't think I think it gets a bit just silly at the end. But I like it. I like it a lot.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned Cronenberg, because when I was watching it, when it got to the bit with the when he wakes up and his face has become this blank mask, as that middle bit progressed, I was just like, this really feels like Cronenberg. This feels like Romero does Cronenberg. And then that very end bit in the warehouse, you two guys will probably completely disagree with me because you are aficionados of this particular director. That warehouse thing, it felt a little bit Dario Argento for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know why. To me, as somebody who doesn't like his films...
and hasn't seen his films.
No, and seen maybe one. It felt exactly like that.
I think the ending was a bit... Well, I don't know. Maybe Brian De Palma on his bad day.
Well, could be. I thought the theatricality of Argento... There was a little... element of that to it. That's what I'm getting at.
I think I know where you're coming from with some of the gruesomeness that happens in it. It's towards the end.
Grand,
all the people
in fancy dress at this party. I don't know, for some reason that's what it said to me.
Interesting. It's a very suburban film as well, because the couple, Henry and Rosie, live in this very suburban sort of three garage house, don't they? You know, it's almost Poltergeist or Spielberg-esque in its location. You know, it's that kind of, you know, like nothing ever happens. It's not, you know, it's a dull feel place. You know, and interestingly, it was the first Romero film not to be filmed in Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
It was actually filmed in Toronto, which is where Cronenberg films a lot of his films.
Yes, of course.
But Romero, didn't he take half Canadian citizenship? Did I say Cronenberg? I mean,
no, you said Romero.
Didn't he take Canadian citizenship or something like that?
I think he
might have done.
All right. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I might have made it up, so I don't. You know.
You know what we haven't spoken about? Is the actors.
Yes.
No.
Jason Fleming.
Yes.
As Henry, the main character. Yeah. A British actor, of course.
Yeah.
What do we remember him for? Is it Lockstock or one of those?
Really?
He's been in a few bits and pieces. And, of course, as the boss, Miles, the fantastic Peter Stormare, who completely chews all the scenery.
He always does, totally.
He's great.
He's really over the top.
It's just a default setting, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Go Ape setting.
And nobody else
that I can think of. There was Tom Atkins as well.
Tom Atkins.
Yeah, from The Fog and... Escape from New York and Halloween 3.
All rubbish.
Oh, what is it? Is he a detective?
Yeah, the detective.
Oh, detective.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
He's
Tom
in
everything.
That's all that he
does. He's in every film as a detective, isn't he? That's what he does.
Yeah, probably. Was he detective in The Fog? I can't remember.
Probably. Who else would he be?
Go on, Mike.
Well, I've just waved my notebook saying, should we do some music in a subtle way, but...
Well, oh, okay, sorry, yes, I didn't understand.
Just give him the warning sign.
Yes. Okay, let's have a little bit of music. Well, what bit of music would you like?
Tee up with this. It's track 7. In the warehouse scene, which I didn't like too much, there's a band playing, a real band called The Misfits. And The Misfits are kind of over sort of pop punk and wear masks.
Well, they're painted faces. So
still a mask.
Yeah. And actually, there's a little backstory to that as well. Sorry, just to build up the track.
Oh, let's build it up. Build it.
That apparently Romero filmed a video. Promotional video for The Misfits as well, and in return he said, "Oh, can you appear in my next film, please? Because I need a band for the scene." So that's why they were in the film.
Ah, because Romero asked them.
Yeah,
that's
the machinations of Hollywood.
Yeah. Can you be in my film, please? Yeah, fine. That's one of the best anecdotes.
Let's listen to the music while Kirk throttles Mike. Here we go. Well. Kirk, you wanted to very briefly speak about themes.
Yeah,
that's themes.
Just sort of themes or observations, I suppose it is, really. But similar themes or films with similar themes, I just wanted to sort of draw attention to it. One that probably a lot of our listeners have possibly seen is Vanilla Sky. You know, again, it's that blank mask thing, you know. And also another very well-known film, French film called Eyes Without a Face.
Les yeux sans visage.
Yes.
Now I'm okay.
And also a little observation about the mask that was used.
And the mask, of course, Jim Carrey.
Yeah, the mask as well, Jim Carrey. But the actual tiny little drilled out eyes and the slightly pulled apart lips were actually a little nod to Metropolis and The Machine Man, the 1927 silent film. So it's actually the same proportions as that actual mask.
Did you find this stuff out?
What depth of the internet did you to find that one?
But it was somehow to give it an unnerving look, and Romero just thought that mask looked very unnerving. The proportions of the eyes and the lips apart, he felt that was the right look to go for this film. So obviously a more simplified version of the Machine Man in Metropolis.
Who's Machine Man?
Wow.
The woman, but she's referred to as Machine Man.
She?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Mike. I'm surprised you don't remember I'm surprised you don't remember it when you saw it in the cinema when it came out.
I did one of the versions, I did. Queen did the soundtrack.
Ooh.
Okay, moving swiftly on.
Yeah, I
know. Well, did I make that up? Is that a cheese dream that I had? I don't know.
That's some weird dream.
I think we should do that every show. We should have a fact from you, Mike. There's nothing more than a cheese dream. Have we got anything further to say about Bruiser?
Other than obviously we haven't talked about what we thought of it. Which is kind of why we're here.
I thought it was all right.
Yeah,
Kirk?
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah,
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 Mike? Right,
yeah, there we are then. glowing recommendations all round. I think we kind of intimated that the final act lets it down a little bit. There is some very interesting stuff in it, though. Mm. And particularly, yes, it did feel very Cronenbergian in the middle.
Definitely.
I think it is worth a look, actually. There's some interesting stuff in it. Mm. I honestly did think it was a little, almost a gem. Mm. Almost a gem.
Yeah, almost, yeah. I'll go along with that. I really enjoyed it. It intrigued me and it kept me engaged right to the end.
Mm.
And the ending, much as I didn't like it much, I only didn't like it because after such a strong middle act, I think it let it down a bit. It's a perfectly good ending for that type of... For a kind of horror film where somebody goes around killing people, that'd be a perfectly fine ending. Mm. I think this film was better than that, and therefore the ending wasn't as good as it could have been.
Mm.
No.
But, it's worth a watch, definitely.
Mm.
So, there we are. Bruiser is available on DVD only, but you should be able to pick it up fairly cheaply from somewhere. George Romero's other overlooked movies. There's actually a really nice little box set coming out in October, again from our chums in Arrow Video, and it's called George Romero Between Night and Dawn. And it's a select number of movies that he made between Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, and it's three movies. And in the box set there's one that's kind of a romantic comedy called There's Always Vanilla, there's one that's a bit of a horror thing called Season of the Witch, and there's another horror-ish one called The Crazies, which has been out before on
DVD. That's a fantastic film.
It is, and was remade as well. So those three are coming out. Sadly, Martin, still not easily available to purchase, which is slightly annoying. Yeah. But for the completist, the Romero completist, that's a good box set to pick up.
Yeah. For my money, Martin is one of his best films, alongside his Dead trilogy. I think it stands alongside them as in quality, in my opinion.
Mm.
Really, really good.
Mm. I wonder, what kind of music was in the film, Martin?
Well, funny you should ask, Dan. Yeah.
What a good question that
was. Well, are we gonna like call it the end to this, tonight's proceedings then?
I think we should, yes.
Yeah, why? Really?
I was gonna drag this out for another hour.
Yeah. Well, let's end with music.
Let's feed Mike some cheese and see what we can get out of him.
Well, let's end with the music, the main music from Martin, which is, I don't know if you performed it, composed by Donald Rubinstein, who did the music from Knight Riders that we talked about.
Hmm.
And this is fantastic. It's very haunting. It's Martin's a vampire flick. Fantastic, fantastic film. And this is the theme from it called The Calling.
Marvellous. Thank you very much. Let's all say good night then before we hear that bit of music.
Good night from Kirk.
Good night from Mike.
Good night from Ian. And good night from me, Dan. We will see you in a month.
Bye.
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 Bye.